Topical Tuesday. It's the news, according to Topical Me. Still not used to that. Drums scare me every time. Hey, good morning. It's Tuesday, February 24th, 6:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I am the, your host for the next, I don't know how long. Sometimes this show goes 15 minutes, and sometimes it goes over an hour. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my cup of chai. Ah, that's good stuff. I have, it's Tuesday, February 24th, February 24th, 6:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the Eastern Standard Time Zone this morning, and I have in my cup, I have a cup of chai with cinnamon creamer. So I am at the home studio. That's a clue for those of you who watch the show, if you just listen to it. Hopefully you're watching whatever you're doing there. I'm watching the road, whatever you're doing, driving down the road, whatever you're doing. Watch out for that raccoon there. In my backup cup, I have a cup of sweet tea. It's actually sweet peach tea. It's homemade sweet peach tea. However, at the moment, it is not very peachy. I just put the peaches in yesterday. Just made this, and it's still has a little bit of that peach. Has to have that little peach. Has to ruminate. Well, has to soak in that peach stuff for a little while before it actually starts to taste peachy. Usually, it tastes more peachy like on the when it's right down at the very end. Finally, starts to really kick in. By tonight, it'll be peachy. By tonight, it's there, almost there. That's my backup cup. I have it's Topical Tuesday. For those of you who don't know what this show is about, if you do know what this show is about, please let me know what this show is about, because I don't know. It's just about me and my opinions. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm just a guy with a fancy microphone that likes to talk on here. It's my sanity break. I get to kind of spew out what's in my head and just pretend like somebody's listening. I pretend like all of you are agreeing with me as I'm talking. That's what I do. Everybody's all agreeable with me. Everybody agrees with me because I say it, therefore it is. Yeah, whatever. I have a lot of opinions. My chai is already cold. I've got to get, I had a cup that had it was a heated cup. It had a little battery in it. It would keep things hot. And I don't know what happened to the charger for it. I found the cup. I can't find the charger. I had it on my boat, and I can't find it on the boat, so it's probably on the boat. It could be somewhere. It could be anywhere. It could be at the bottom of the lake. I don't know where it's. It literally could have been packed up in somebody else's bag. I had a jacket walk off one day. Somebody wasn't even the person who would put it there. Wasn't even their bag. It was they accidentally put the coat back in somebody else's bag. Lost my coat that way. Well, I got it back. I got it back. Don't worry. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh no, you got to buy Kevin a coat. No, I got it back. I'm fine. I'm not coatless. I have a coat for the winter. I have one coat for all winter. I have so many coats. I find coats that I'm worn. I like that coat. I forgot I had that coat. I should probably wear that coat for at least once this winter. All right, everything's up and running this morning. We've got the AI system is all fully functional, doing its thing. It'd be interesting to see what kind of responses we get on Topical Tuesday. Now, today I'm going to talk about the topic for today. I don't know how to label it necessarily, but we're going to talk about economics in general, but we're going to talk about the market in general. We're going to drill down into the nitty-gritty of the stock market, how it affects the economy, what's going on with the economy, and all things around what's happening with the stock market. The stock market is not necessarily, people like to say, oh, the Dow's up. I don't know if you guys have heard the it's actually pretty funny. Kind of the mockery of Pam Bondi as she was, I'm just going to see if I can put in this Pam Bondi. So I think I can find it just by doing this. This is it here. This, I, Is this how long? This is 31 seconds long. Let's see if it works. It's not a short. I wanted to get a short. Well, that is a short. Okay, we'll play this. We'll see what happens.
How many of Epstein's co-conspirators have you indicted?
Here we go.
How many perpetrators are you even?
The Dow right now is over 50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. That's what we should be talking about. The Dow right now. S&P at almost 7,000. The American people need to know this. Need to know.
That's kind of the now. This is obviously. I don't think that this was a Republican. Did I don't think maybe so. I don't know. But they're showing Democrats asking her questions, and of course that's because that's who was really
this
after her.
Is that?
This is. I don't know why that just did that. We have. It went to the next thing there. I don't know why we have. It's kind of funny because she tried to deflect off to the Dow. It's, you know, it's over $50,000. She almost said $50,000 and she caught herself. She went $50,000. You know, I don't know why you're laughing. You know, it's because, well, the reason they're laughing is because has nothing to do with what they were there to ask you about. Now, the whole thing, though, is this idea that they're going after the Epstein. All of a sudden, they're after the Epstein files. They called her, into account. Why are we not going after any perpetrators, folks? The Epstein thing didn't just happen when Trump got elected. This whole thing happened. It happened under his first term. He wasn't able to finish all that. Biden did nothing with it. His DOJ had all the everything that they have, probably more than they have now, because I'm pretty sure they got rid of a lot of it. I would not be. Somebody's got it. You know that even because there's a lot of this is the way that the folks play the game. The FBI and all these people that are out there, they play this game by having, you know, we have information on you, and we can let this be known. Therefore, you don't need to play along with what we want you to do, or we can let this go. We can let this out there. And of course, all these Democrats that were all these wackos that were. Oh, his name shows up in the Epstein files. Well, a lot of people's names show up. If you're anybody in the country, if you're a well-known person, your name probably is in the Epstein files. Your name is probably in there. Now, why it's in there is a whole other issue. I don't care who's named in the Epstein files. I really don't. Whoopi Goldberg is in the Epstein files. Of course, all of a sudden she's, well, you know, just because I know a lot of people and because, well, they had a plane. I was supposed to fly on a plane and apparently I didn't even know about the plane. My plane wasn't available, so they asked Epstein about his plane. I don't even hear. Oh, all of a sudden you're squirming saying you don't know anything about this. Oh, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know the plane was not even available. I didn't know any of this. And we're supposed to believe you. But we can't believe Trump when he says stuff like that. And it's look, aircraft, there's a thing in the FAA that's actually in the FARs where if you have a jet aircraft, a turbojet aircraft, it talks about sharing that aircraft. They want the aircraft to be utilized. It's all in a, you know, that's the whole point of the legislation is if an airplane's sitting in a hangar, they want people to be able to, you know, and yours is down for maintenance or whatever. They want people to be able to exchange and trade with, keep those machines running and keep them going. It's a part of, you know, it's just a part of the efficient, necessary part of the economics of the way things work. They want the aircraft to stay in the skies and they want them to be utilized. And so they have provisions for that. They have an ability, your ability to lease the aircraft out to a certain extent. You can, if you own an aircraft, if I owned a jet today and I had a jet and it was sitting in the hangar, some other company said, hey, can we borrow your airplane today? Yeah, we can do it under FAR, whatever. I don't know what the FAR is. Federal Aviation Regulation. It's under that whole thing. You can share it. You have to be careful how you do it because it can't be considered charter. If they have their own pilots, of course, you can lease the aircraft and they can fly it or they can hire their own pilots or whatever they want to do. You can't use your pilots and then pay. I guess they could. I think there is a way to go get around that. It depends on how the entities are set up. I had a small club one time. Actually, I had a flight school. Back in the 90s, and I had this. So we had to set up with several entities. We had an LLC. We had a sub S corporation, and we also had another LLC. And then, so the aircraft were all owned by one LLC, and that company employed no pilots. But all the pilots that flew, and then the flight school leased the airplanes from that LLC. Now, in the process, so they were all checked out in the airplanes. What could happen there was you had a deal where you could have the airplanes rented by anyone. The LLC was set up so they could rent the airplanes to anyone or lease the airplanes to anyone. They had their own insurance. So they were, it was kind of a double insurance thing. That was a little bit expensive, that part of it was. But it wasn't that much. But it was, those are basically just liability insurance. So anybody could come to the LLC and say, hey, we want to rent the airplane and we want to hire these pilots over here that are checked out. And so it was the pilots would bill them, or the company, actually my flight school, would bill them for pilot service. The other company, they would get a bill from the other company for the rental on the aircraft. So they were renting their own aircraft. They became the operator. It wasn't a charter service. It wasn't an air taxi. It was their airplane. They were hiring pilots to fly them. Kind of a little bit of a workaround. And the whole thing was done with the FAA's approval. We checked everything out at that time. It was the local FISDO was okay with it. They had no problem with it. The only issue with it, and of course the FAA kept reminding me of this, make sure that company knows, the company that's renting the airplane knows that they're the operator. If that airplane goes down and crashes into a schoolhouse, their company can be held liable. If an air taxi service, if you go out and get a taxi and that taxi driver runs over somebody, you're not held liable for that. If you hire a driver, if you own the car, or if you rent the car and you hire a driver and that driver drives over somebody, you're out to dry. You're on the list. And it's kind of the same way with the aircraft. If you do the same thing with the aircraft. So it was an issue that they want to make sure that the owner. So I ended up having my insurance agent was awesome at the time. He did a really good job. He was over the top, always stopping and making sure everything was okay. Good relationship with that guy. He was making a lot of money from me, but he was he set up this rental program, renter's insurance program, so that if somebody wanted to go rent the airplane, use it, they could either purchase a one-time policy or they could purchase on a monthly plan kind of thing, which worked out pretty well. And I always thought about it'd be interesting to get, and I almost did this. In fact, I had one investor that was ready to come up with, like $1 million investment. We were paying 10% straight line on their, it was 10% a year basically is what you got on your investment. But it kind of fell apart. There were some people who, apparently there's some bad vibes out there or something. Somebody, I had one investor that just was adamant about wanting his money back. And you're supposed to lock it in for 5 years. And this one guy wanted his money back and he was just adamant about it. And he was concerned that this whole thing was a Ponzi scheme. It was not a Ponzi scheme. We owned something. You were investing in something, and it wasn't like we were just. Now, of course, the more investors we had, the easier it made it for everything, because there was just cash flow for everything that had to happen there. But it was this guy he got cold feet. He was in it for about 6 months, and he was convinced. Somebody told him that he was convinced that we were going broke, and it was this whole thing was a Ponzi scheme, and he's going to lose his money. And even though he was getting his quarterly checks, and we're just going to pay. We're just going to break the contract, and I'm going to give him money back. And of course, that was money that we didn't really. I mean, it was operational funds. We already had the money invested in an airplane. Now, of course, we pulled that out, and he was no longer in the club anymore. He couldn't even. He was taking flying lessons at the time as well. Of course, if you were an investor in the LLC, you also got a discount because you kind of own part of the airplane. So you got a discount in your flight training. And so he was no longer allowed in the club anymore. I mean, he was done. There was a kind of a parting of ways. However, I think he was shocked when I showed up with a check. It was a cashier's check. It wasn't just a check. It was a cashier's check. And he walked away. I think he kind of was a little bit shocked that we were actually able to come up with the money. You could tell. Look on his face was kind of like, oh, I guess they do have the money. And it's maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. You could almost tell he was kind of hesitant to do it. I mean, he was almost like he wanted to give me the check back. And no, that's not, no, we're done. I'm not, if you don't trust me, I'm not going to do business with you. Just, we're done. And it did kind of hurt us because we were, you know, that well, anyway, yeah, let's just say aviation is a tough business to make any kind of money in. But anyway, getting back to this whole thing, we're going to talk about the stock market, all the stuff that's going on. There's some stuff going on, and a lot of this has to do the economics of things. A lot of things we could talk about today. We could talk about Illinois and what's happening there, some of the other states that are following it. Illinois has got over $200 billion in pension funds alone that they're behind. They can't fund it. They don't know how they're going to fund it. Now, the problem is, that, of course, the only way they can fund it is by raising taxes. They can't. There's nothing else they can do. They're stuck with this. They have to raise taxes. In the process of doing that, what ends up happening is because they're raising taxes on, especially on businesses, because they think businesses can afford it. Billionaires, our economy's too big. We can tax them more because they can afford it. Our economy's too big. They're not going to leave. The Chicago Bears are talking about coming to Indiana now, into Hammond, because they're making a better deal. Indiana's making them a better, they're going to build them a dome stadium. And they're going to come over to Indiana. Now, I don't think they're going to be, I don't know if they're going to change the name, but it might still be called the Chicago Bears. Everything over in that area, Gary, Indiana, Gary Airport, they all consider themselves part of Chicago for some reason. I don't know why. But they do. So it's a weird situation here. And now BlackRock, I believe, is pulling out their main offices or whatever they got going on in, you know, Illinois. Pritzker's throwing a tizzy fit over that whole thing. Now, every communist country, this is what they did. Now, Cuba was a very good example of what happens when communists come in and they start taking over. They want to take over everybody's money. They just think everybody's just going to stay and go, oh, okay, here's my money. No, everybody, all the people with means, they leave. So it's happening in New York. It's happening in California. If you can afford it, you get out. And all it leaves is the people who can't afford to get out. And you're stuck with people who have no means. They're not productive. They're not the ones who are the movers and the shakers, the people who are, you know, the top of the piggy pile as far as those who are being productive.
We built this country. Well, no, you didn't.
That's not the way it works. So anyway, Illinois is spiraling out of control, and there's other states following. I mean, you have the same philosophical business model, if you want to call it that, or the economic model in the same states. Now, how this is going to play out in the long run, I don't know how this is going to play out. They're going to ask for a federal bailout. What's going to end up happening? They're going to want federal money to bail them out, to meet their obligations. And of course, they're going to just continue to raise taxes. The more you raise taxes, the more you're going to drive out business. When you can go to Texas and not pay any corporate sales tax or corporate income tax, you're going to save about 10% a year. If you got a multi-million dollar company, you're talking, you know, you can say you make $100 million a year. You're going to save $10 million. That's a lot of money to be reinvested, or just give back to the stockholders, whatever you're doing. It's a huge difference in your profit margin right there. Now, there's other things that they charge for, but this idea that you're going to just tax businesses into oblivion. This is what Mom Donnie's doing right now. He's saying, well, we can tax these businesses. We can raise taxes because nobody's going to leave. And then people leave. In fact, I think it was the company that decided to leave New York recently, and he made a fit. He threw a fit over this whole thing. He's upset about it because I can't remember what the name of the company is. Let me look at my history. Maybe I got it in here somewhere. I think I tried to listen to it last night. I think I fell asleep. But Let me see if I can find it. It's got to be here. I'm pretty sure I listened to it last night. I didn't listen to it, but I slept through it. Let's see if I can find it here. It's not it. That's not it. Oh, here we go. Yeah, I guess BlackRock is leaving New York. That's in New York City. I thought they were leaving. Somebody's leaving. There's a big company leaving. Well, Boeing is talking about leaving. A lot of companies who have their offices downtown are talking about leaving. The Sophia Miller she has an AI podcast, webcast, whatever you want to call it, video cast thing. She does. She has an AI model doing her. These talking heads, the AI talking head thing really, it bugs. What bugs me is that, you know, you can tell they're typing things in. It's a script that they're having their little AI replicant or their little AI avatar, whatever they're doing. That kind of bothers me because they're coming across, they don't talk about it. They're coming across like it's supposedly like a real person. I think YouTube is heading this direction. I think a lot of things are heading this direction. It's going to have a disclaimer down at the bottom saying something about AI generated actor or whatever. They got to do that. I can't stand it. It's because I know what I know about people, how they bob their head and talk and use their hands when they talk. Now, other than Gavin Newsom, whose hands just go off in weird directions with no comment. There's nothing related to what he's doing. He can say something being small and he's got his hands, you know, are just going all over the place, or something being big and he's got, he just, I don't know what he, but his hands always have to move when he's talking. It's really weird. It's uncomfortably weird. Now, the thing about the AI generated speakers, people who are talking, they at least they're blinking and stuff now, which is, you know, that's something they've got going on. And they do kind of some gestures. They'll move their heads and they'll move their hands and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what bothers me is they move them contrary to the way a normal person would talk. There's no stumbling, no bumbling, no mumbling. It's you listen to anybody who's doing a normal talk show, just like I'm doing right now. There's all the little fillers that happen, all the little stumbles, all the little things that happen. And of course, now they're using AI to remove those things. I could put my podcast through a system that would take all that stuff out. It would take all the ums and ahs and all that stuff. It would take it all out. It would cut it down. It would even cut down some of the spaces so I can get more in an hour. It's all well and good, but it destroys the human interaction, the human ability to make a connection. Now, I listen to a lot of podcasts on 1.25 times the speed. If you go to 1.5, it's almost to the point where it's so unnatural, unless it's just information you just kind of want to skim through. 1.25, you can usually do it. Now, if a person's got a heavy accent or they're hard to understand, 1.25 even makes it difficult. Sometimes, even at 1.0, it's hard to understand some of the people who are talking. But it's not. And granted, if a person has a really hard time speaking, and they're using an AI generated thing to do, it's almost kind of like an enhanced way of them to be able to do something with that. I'm okay with that. If they otherwise would not be able to talk, or they have a really bad voice or whatever it is that they're trying to deal with, I get it. At least that's a way for them to have a voice, kind of like it's almost like I want to call it a handicap. It's a prosthesis, if you will, way to get their message out there, and they can type over everything in and just have the AI thing speak it out for them. I get it. I get that. But at the same time, I think it just needs to be, there needs to be something at the bottom there saying, or something on the screen saying, this is an AI-generated person. It's not a real person, because it's kind of a weird, it's just weird to me, and I don't like it. Maybe even the voice is AI-generated, I don't know. But you can tell sometimes, because I was listening to this podcast the other day, and they were calling it the Savvy Act. Instead of the Save Act, they were calling it the Savvy Act. So apparently somebody didn't spell it right, or the way they spelled it in their script, they spelled it in a way so that the the AI was reading it as Savey Act instead of the Save Act. I'm talking about all the voting issues. And it was a very left-leaning podcast, by the way. It was talking about the Save Act and how, our country has a long history of non-citizens voting. They're talking about 1920, back in 1920, before 1920. There was a time when people were coming to this country. You didn't just come in and go out and just, you know, first of all, you came here, you came through a process. You actually went through a registration process. We knew who you were. And you weren't necessarily a citizen. And some places allowed you to vote in local elections. And that's been a regular thing. The people who are here, the vast majority of them are not on green cards. There's a lot of people here on green cards. But there's a huge number that are not. Now, we might be able to ask one of our callers. Oh, we might have a caller. Let's see what we've got going on here. We have, let's just ask this guy what's going on. Go ahead, Artie. What do you have to say this morning? Sometime. Anytime. You just want to say something. Go ahead and say something. Are you going to? Was there something wrong? Maybe I didn't put the API keys in. Maybe we got the wrong thing in there. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, it's not doing anything. Something's wrong. AI ready. Says AI ready. Yeah, well, it's all ready. It's already ready. I'm going to allow this again. Let's see what happens here when I hit this this call button. I lost all my context now.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I have a few questions about what you're talking about.
Okay.
You know, the whole market stock market thing.
Yeah.
Do you have any suspicions about it being manipulated? Seriously. I mean, is it legit or are we all just being played?
Well, you know, that's a good question, Artie. I don't know why. There's something in my gut tells me that the powers that be out there probably are, somebody's manipulating it. I think that there's an insider class that kind of rules and runs the stock market. It always has been. The Great Depression, I think, when the great initial crash in the 19, when it crashed after the Roaring Twenties. The end of the 20s and the 30s, whenever it was, 1929, whenever it crashed. I can't remember. Maybe you can tell me, Artie, when it crashed, if you remember. When did the stock market crash? I think that basically what we have is a cabal, if you will. There's kind of this group of people who kind of manage and run things behind the scenes, and they always kind of trimming the economy, they're shaving off, you know, our productivity. They don't want anybody else to get rich the way they are. So I think that there is something to say for that. I don't know what. Maybe you have some opinions about that, but it's one of those. To answer your question, I think yes, I think it is rigged.
Well, technically speaking, the stock market is a complex and opaque system that has long been susceptible to manipulation by powerful insiders.
Mm-hmm.
The crashes of the 1920s and 1930s are prime examples of how the market can be distorted by those with access to inside information and the ability to influence the flow of capital. While the modern markets may appear more regulated, mm-hmm. the potential for exploitation by the financial elite persists.
Yes,
I think your gut instinct about the market being rigged to benefit a privileged few is not an unreasonable conclusion, given the historical precedents.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, then. So I guess, you know, what you're saying then, I guess, is what you're saying is I'm right. Sorry. I think it's very possible. I think it's not just possible. I think it's absolutely what's happening. But, I don't know. It's kind of a...
War. Are we headed for a full-blown war?
What?
How's this all going to play out
what
with the
was
current
that?
Market situation?
What? I think maybe you had too much coffee this morning. Are you feeling okay? Maybe some meds. I don't know. Have you? Or maybe too much meds. I don't know. As far as the war goes, let's talk about that. I think that there's a very, very good possibility that there's definitely something happening with Iran right now. Now, as far as the effects of war on the stock market, on our economy, it will again, the stock market is run by greed and fear. And if you notice what happened right after, you know, we got attacked on 9/11, all the things that happened, everybody ran to the gas station, got their cars filled up with gas. They were all concerned about what was going on. Everybody was all freaking out about that. And of course, that didn't stop the flow of oil, didn't stop the flow of gasoline. The prices went up all of a sudden. There was a bunch of weird stuff happening all over the country. It was kind of a blip on the screen, which because it was all fear motivated. That same fear motivates people to go out and purchase gasoline or whatever they're purchasing or whatever they're doing, buying, selling, whatever they're doing. It is motivated by fear. And the greed is on the other side of that, where people want to make some kind of money. But you being the historian that you are, maybe you could help us with the answering some questions about that, I guess. Maybe, I don't know. Go ahead and... give me your thoughts.
My dear caller, it seems you may have become a bit unnerved by the complexities of the financial markets and geopolitical tensions. However, I must caution against unsubstantiated theories or alarmist rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
While the stock market can indeed be prone to manipulation by powerful interests, modern regulatory environment provides more safeguards than in the past.
Oh, really?
For the current situation with Iran, I would encourage you to follow trusted news sources and avoid spreading unverified speculation. Perhaps we could have a more constructive discussion about strategies for responsible long-term investing during uncertain times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to provide a calmer perspective if you're open to it.
No, I'm not. I'm not open to any calmer. I don't want a calmer perspective. I want fear and loathing. That's what I want. That's what this show is all about. Interesting stuff. I have. Let's just see what else we can possibly talk about here. I don't know what else.
I'll get right to it.
Okay.
Do you think the market will crash badly this year? I mean, what are your thoughts on the tariff ruling from SCOTUS?
Oh,
how do you think that's going to affect investors in the business market?
Well,
that's all I got.
Okay. Well, good question. It's a good question, and I think I kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday. As far as the market is concerned, I think that we have probably. Again, fear and greed run the market, and it's one of those things where I think that it will be another blip on the screen. I think that the tariffs themselves have driven a lot of baseline fundamental growth. I think that there's a lot of good things that have happened because of the tariffs. But they're not easily seen, and it's not easily felt in the pocketbook, which is where the American people kind of need to have some kind of understanding. We need to, and this is where I think the Trump administration falls flat a lot. They do not do the best job, and of course, it's difficult when you have a media that's fighting back about everything else, Epstein, whatever it is. They're calling Trump a pedophile, all kinds of stuff now, and where are they getting this stuff? It blows me away that they continue to gnaw arm here. I don't understand it. But they the whole thing about this whole the market itself, whether or not it's going to crash, the tariff issue. It's a blip on the radar. It's not something that's going to be a long-lasting effect in a bad way. I think that people are panicking because they hear the rhetoric on the left, and they just don't. Anything Trump does, they're not going to like it. If Biden would have done that, it would have been the best thing on the planet. But just because Trump is doing it, it's the worst thing. They have to vilify everything he does. And, of course, that just does nothing but undermines any kind of positive thinking or any kind of positive message on the left. And I think that there are some people on the left now who are starting to recognize this. Bill Maher is one. He's still an idiot. Don't get me wrong. He's completely off his rocker. He's a total – there's several people on the left, but they come out and it I think Fetterman has probably been the most refreshing of people on the left. Now, for example, this one, she's kind of left leaning. She won a gold medal, and she came out and she was proud to be an American. She was proud of the support that the American people get. She wrapped herself in a flag. She was just normal. She wasn't overzealously like crazy radical, you know, screaming America, America. But she wasn't dissing America. She wasn't dissing the country who supported her and got her there. Don't get me wrong. Don't think for a minute that our Olympic athletes fund their own way all the way there. They're getting help and support from the U.S. government. The American people are behind them, supporting them, cheering them on. They want them to win. And for them to turn around and say, well, this country sucks, this country's terrible, oh, this country's terrible, oh, it's a racist. That's okay. Then go play for another country somewhere else. Go somewhere else and do your thing. And I think that's where I got tired of all that. And yet she can't. Now, she's not necessarily from the right wing. Now, of course, a lot of people on the right have come out and said, well, thank you for respecting the country, at least. And of course, then the left comes out and says, oh, I bet you guys didn't even know you've been owned because she's not even, look at this. She's not even a right winger. She's a left winger. And you guys are praising her. But, yeah, because that's what we do. If you do something good, we'll give you praise for that. We don't vilify you for, your entire life for one thing that you've done wrong. It's just kind of the way it is. So that's what normal people do, but apparently they don't necessarily think that way. And it's true. Liberal hive mind did a thing about that. So what do you think? Skip. Skip. Yeah, go ahead, Skip. I probably talked you to sleep.
Well, now, hold on here. I've been listening to all this, and I got to say, I'm a little concerned about the direction this is going. Now, back in my day, we didn't have all this constant bickering and finger-pointing like we see today.
Yeah.
People could have civil disagreements without it turning into a total dumpster fire.
Well, yeah.
Look, I get that the media can be a mess, and there's plenty to criticize on both sides of the aisle.
Sure.
But this idea that everything Trump does is automatically the worst thing ever just because he's the one doing it, that's a load of nonsense. The guy may rub people the wrong way, but you can't deny that some...
I don't know what happened. Oh, what happened there? Oops, I'm sorry. I think I hung up on him. Didn't mean to do that. Let's he's probably going to respond exactly the same way he did the first time. Let's go ahead, Skip. What do you think?
Well, hold on there, partner. I've been listening to all this back and forth, and I got to say, I'm a little concerned about the direction this whole thing is heading. Now, back in my day, we didn't have all this constant bickering and finger-pointing like we see these days.
People
used to be able to have civil disagreements without it turning into a total dumpster fire.
Yeah, I think we heard this before.
Look, I get that the media can be a real mess, and there's plenty to criticize on both sides of the aisle.
Uh-huh.
But this idea that everything Trump does is automatically the worst thing ever just because he's the one doing it, that's a low.
That's a low. A low what? Let's check in with somebody who doesn't really have a clue. Clueless people are.
Howdy.
Hey, yeah,
I got nothing.
Yeah,
just curious about this show and why anyone would listen to it. Why? Just why? I mean, why?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I know why my wife listens to it. Because she kind of feels obligated, I think, to listen to it. She's it's one way for her to find out things that I'm thinking about. That's without having to, because I'm gone half the time. Half my life I'm gone. So she gets to hear about some of the things I talk about. But I don't know. There's other people who listen to it as well. Good friends of mine. I know they listen to it and some other people. They're all good. You're all good friends of mine. If you listen to this show, you're a good friend of mine. Well, listen, maybe. I'm sure there's people out there that don't like the show and they listen to it just because they don't like me. That's probably the case. I don't know. Maybe you should tell me. Why do you listen to it? Because you're listening to it. Why do you listen to it? What do you think? What are you doing?
Whoa, I hear you, girl. It's a wild world out there these days, for sure. All this constant back and forth and finger pointing, it's just too much sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Can't we just chill and have a civil convo without it turning into a full-blown dumpster
fire? I
don't
think we can, no.
And this whole thing with Trump, I get that he rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but that doesn't mean everything he does is automatically the worst, just because he's the one doing it.
Let's
keep it real. The media can be a hot mess on both sides.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, as for your wife listening to...
Well, now wait a minute. Can't go any further than that. We have... have to hang up on you there. Can't take any advice about that. We have, anyway, the stock market. Let's get back into this whole thing. I think that the main thing to take away from this morning is that there's a lot of things happening ideologically. There's these little microcosms that we have, like I was saying about Cuba earlier. They tried to crack down on all. They tried to confiscate. They did appropriate most of the wealth that anybody who was wealthy that left. They just confiscated all their wealth. They took all their stuff. And this is where I think in Venezuela it was the same way. What they ended up doing was they ended up. There's a couple. I think there was an oil company there. They ended up taking all their assets. Appropriated at all. Of course, they ran the place in the ground. But and that's typical. The whole Marxist socialist agenda, the democratic socialism, that's what they do all the time. Now, California is doing this. If you leave the state, they want to tax you. They want to be able to confiscate your funds and tax you on anything that you, if you just do business in their state, they want to tax you for that. If I do a voiceover for someone in California, they would have come after me and make me pay taxes there. It is a crazy, but they have to. They have to, because they have to fund their social programs. Oh, and it's not their social. And don't get me wrong, they're not funding their social programs. Their social programs are worthless. $12 billion they've spent on homelessness in California. And there are more homeless people there today than there were. This is the kind of thing that they do all the time. What was the other? Is it $120 billion they spent on a train? I don't know how much it is. Whatever it is they've spent on the rail system, their high-speed rail in California. Let's see if I can find something here real quick. Let's just do that. Let's search for that. Let's click on that. See what we get. The whole high speed rail thing. This probably is going to come up with a commercial. Actually, come think of it, I didn't sign in. I can just sign in. So let's sign in here real quick. It's not going to work. It's not going to be quick. Yeah, I should have signed into this to my YouTube account first, and then it wouldn't have been an issue with the. I probably have to open my app and all that stuff. I think I can do it with that. I managed to do one click. That's a possibility. See if that works. Check your phone. You have to tap yes.
The golden age.
Yeah, that's not what we really wanted to do. This is so frustrating because you open up the app and it doesn't. It's not going to do it. I have to do it. You have to resend it in order to make this work. No, of course, it's not. Yeah, it's not. Not letting me do it. iPhone. Yeah, notification to your iPhone. And I pull up my iPhone and I open up the YouTube app and it doesn't give me anything. It just goes to whatever it was that was on there. Can't open it. So I can't open it on that particular one. Oh, it's frustrating as all get out. I have, as I said, AI is not as smart as you thought. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, I do want to talk about AI, but I want to talk about the issues with the stock market itself and the high-speed rail. They get in these situations where they just blow your money. Where does it go? Now, there's some question about whether or not some of this money is being funneled back to campaign funding, which I believe it is. I have no doubt that there's money sloshing around going into campaign funds. It's a big machine that they have to have in order to make all this work, because they have to pay people off to get the ballot harvesting and all that stuff that has to happen. And of course, the SAVE Act. You realize Kamala Harris won every state that did not have voter ID. And she lost every state that did. So it is a very interesting concept. Now, I don't know, and I'm sure some of that has to do with just the reflection of whether it's a red state or blue state. However, why are they so adamant about this? When 30 years ago, Chuck Schumer was on the floor advocating for voter ID. And now they're talking like it's the most discriminatory, Jim Crow, all this. And by the way, Jim Crow was a Democrat. These people are just it's completely, they just have no self-awareness whatsoever. They have no introspective. They have no ability to understand history itself. And they shout about things that happened in history their side did. Oh, but it switched. It all switched. Well, no, you just say it switched. It didn't switch. You just claim it switched. I've seen siblings do this. I've seen people do this in their families. Something will happen when they're kids. I know a guy. This has happened to him. His brother was always doing this stuff my buddy of mine who was in my class. He kind of got in trouble for it. He kept getting blamed for it. And it wasn't him. It was his brother. And his brother always had this way of making it look like he was the guilty one. And it always got flipped over to his side. And it was amazing how the parents didn't notice this. I was always kind of shocked about it. I kind of think they kind of finally had suspicions. And I think now he admits to it. But at the time, he was always able to flip it around and make it say, oh, it wasn't. Blame it on his brother. And I'm like, his brother had nothing to do with this. How does this work? And growing up, his buddy of mine was vilified in his own family. It was just the most bizarre kind of concept, dynamic going on there. But he, his brother was the favored child, and it was just weird. It was just a weird deal. This happens with the Democrats. And it's a typical thing that you'll see in junior high kids. What I've seen anyway. I mean, I was a junior high kid once. I remember it very well. I also was a camp counselor for several years. And I was constantly working with junior high kids. Also worked with grade schoolers. Grade schoolers are very different. Kids who are in there from fourth to sixth grade, and getting into sixth grade, they start to come. Seventh and eighth grade, it's just a unique age. And it's kind of wonder why, the public school system, why they divide up junior high schools. Why usually typically junior high schools are seventh and eighth graders. They're like 12 to, 11, 12 years old. Typically 12 to 13, 14 years old. Because right in that stage, they are a handful. They're trying to develop kind of this independent, they want to be adults. They're trying to act like they kind of want to be like seniors. They want to be the, I can make my own decisions group, but they don't want to be accountable or responsible for any of the decisions they make. But they want to pretend like they can, they're adult enough to make these decisions on their own. They can do this cool stuff that the big kids do. But they have no accountability for what they do. And it, unfortunately, today's parents kind of let them get away with whatever they want to do. Because they didn't raise them right from in second grade. So they get to, by the time they get to their 11, 12-year-old self, they're already used to getting their way and throwing their little tantrums. And that's what we have in the Democrat Party. We basically have a bunch of 12-year-olds. My opinion, anyway. In terms of psychological development and their maturity level, there's a baseline part of them that acts like a 12-year-old. And I have no other way of just describing. Look at AOC. Look at we're talking about their leaders. The people who should have some kind of... This is why I like Fetterman. I disagree with a lot of his politics, but I could at least sit down and have a discussion with the man, even though he's hard to talk to, but he's hard to communicate with just because he has a hard communication issue. But I would rather sit down and talk to him for an hour than Bernie Sanders or AOC or Chuck Schumer. Oh my gosh. If I had to listen to that guy talk for an hour, that would be the, wow. Worst day of my life. But at least you can reason with Fetterman. I think you can have an actual discussion with the guy about ideas and philosophical ideology and all everything else, just politics, whatever. I think you can talk to the guy. Whereas these other knuckleheads, they're just off on this rant. Now, maybe they would talk to you in a normal tone and everything would be fine until they get back in front of the camera again. But I think that's what I appreciate. I guess I could say I appreciate about Fetterman is that he has some reasoning skills, and he's realizing what they're doing on the left right now is just off the rails. They're just out of their lily-livered minds, and a lot of it has to do with Trump derangement. They're just gnashing their teeth at the orange man bad, and don't think for a minute. There are a lot of them, many of them are who are their leaders, are talking about punishing the people who voted for him. Why? And here's something that's really bizarre. I just saw another interview with Robert De Niro, and he's crying about the country and how much he cares about it, how terrible things are under this regime that we got going on. When has Robert De Niro first? Why would you get so passionate about something like this? I didn't like a lot of things that Barack Obama stood for, and a lot of his policies, a lot of things he did when he was president. A lot of things. I care about our country deeply. I never got to the point where I would stand in front of a group of people and say, F Obama, or whatever it was, and then get in an interview, and all I could talk about is just continue to gush about how, oh, terrible, this is terrible. I don't care about our country. What exactly? Please name one thing, at least. Well, immigrants are way immigrants are treated. No, it's not immigrants that are treated that way. It's illegal immigrants. His wife is an immigrant. She's not an illegal immigrant. What? The problem is people have come here illegally. There's a process. We don't know who half of them are. And we want to treat them like human beings, but we want to be respected as a nation, and we want our laws respected. You want to be treated with decency and respect? Then that's fine. We'll treat you with decency and respect. Go stand in line. Right after 9/11 happened, I was an airline pilot. I went back to work. And I was on my way to the airport, got to the airport, and there was only one line for all the employees to go through. And that all the employees not just crew members, all the employees, people who cleaned the toilets, people who had the restaurants, people who mopped the floors, people who changed the light bulbs, all the maintenance personnel, whoever it was and whatever you did, baggage handlers, whatever you were. We all went through one line. When they opened up the line, it was a mad rush. People just pressed in to try to get through this little, it was just a mob of people. No line. I was up near the front of the line. Everybody started crowding in around me and pushing me back. And I said, I did say this, and I will always remember this. And I don't know what came over me. I think it was just the fact that I used to ride the train. I had the crash pad, and I rode the L a lot. There were times I would go completely from the airport to my crash pad, and I never heard English spoken once the entire time. I think it started to wear at me, especially at that moment, right after what had happened at 9/11. The first people who died that day were crew members. And it just hit me too hard, I think. It bothered me for a long time. For a year, it bothered me. Because almost every day, you would hear somebody talking about 9/11. Every day. For a year after that. It wasn't a day that went by that I didn't hear somebody say something, either off, you know, just hearing somebody talking about it or having a conversation with me. 9/11 always was brought up at some point during the day. So it was this was like four or five days after it happened. Airports were starting to open back up again. I said, "This is America. We stand in line." And people kind of settled down and got back in line. Because that's what we do. We respect each other. We respect our place in line. When you bust in and cut in front of somebody, simply because you want to make a better life for yourself. Well, yeah, we all do. I get it. I understand that. Do it the right way. Or stay in your country and make it better. This nation did not get where it got without pressuring the powers that be. Anyway, if you want liberty, if you want to make your country great, and of course they want to make it sound like, oh, this is the richest nation in the world. Why don't we have health care? We should be able to take care of everybody. We should be able to do a lot of things, but it's at the expense of gutting our nation, gutting our freeness, our liberties. I want everybody to be able to afford their own health care. That's what I want. I don't want to have everybody to depend on everybody else to pay for it. So that's because at some point, there's not enough people to pay for everybody's health care. Because you go out and spend your money on an Xbox instead of spending it on healthcare. Well, somebody else pays for all that. So I can go out and buy myself an Xbox. Everybody else has one. Why can't I have one? I need an iPhone. I need a $1,500 phone because, you know, I can't afford to take care of my hangnail, but I can go out and buy myself a phone. So anyway, that's just the way it goes. And it's just people make stupid decisions with their... And I understand it feels like the psychology of money when you start to try to save money, it's very difficult to overcome the whole thing with, you know, it's just, you don't, you go through years of, saving, and you know, and you just don't feel like you've made it anywhere. And then all of a sudden it starts to snowball and there's this rate of return. I was just heard this example the other day. There's the, if a small pond has a lily pad and it doubles the size of that lily pad every day until day, and it takes 30 days for that lily pad or that pond to be completely covered with lily pads. On what day is it half covered? Day 29. If it's doubling every day, it takes forever to get to the point where it's half covered, and then all of a sudden it is covered completely in one day. You don't see the growth initially until it starts to snowball, and then it escalates, and then all of a sudden you were putting in $500 a month or $6,000 a year. And now all of a sudden it's growing $10,000 a year on top of your $6,000 that you're putting in it. On its own, without doing anything, it's growing $10,000 a year. When it starts to take over and starts to outgive you, now you're talking extreme exponential growth. You get to $100,000, all of a sudden you're getting $10,000 a month or $10,000 a year on top of the $6,000 you're putting into it. And the next year, it's going to make even more and it compounds even further. And it's just, and the little chart goes up exponentially. It doesn't just go up linearly, it goes up exponentially. It's a curve that goes up, which is quite amazing. And on that line, on that tomorrow, we're going to talk. I am going to talk about AI tomorrow. I'm going to talk about AI and the effect. Some of the things that are going on. I know this. It's not topical Tuesday tomorrow, but it's wishy washy Wednesday. I'm going to talk about AI and its effects on everything in the economy, and in politics and everything in general, manufacturing, everything is about it and what's happening. Because there's some interesting things happening. I think it's on the cusp, and I think people need to be aware of it. I'm going to be pushing it a little bit more. I'm thinking about having an actual podcast that is separate from this one that's only about AI. I am not an expert on AI. I'm not an expert on any kind of intelligence, let alone artificial intelligence. But I am going to... I've been diving into it a lot more, and I'm finding out a lot about... I listen to a lot of podcasts that talk about the different perspectives that people have about what's happening with AI. Programmers in general, and it's stuff that people will not... I guarantee you, you do not want to listen to this stuff. It is boring, but it's I just wanted to let you know what is going on, what's in the mind of the people who are behind some of this, and what's some interesting things happening among the Googles and the Microsofts and the Facebooks and all the other big tech companies out there, what they're trying to do with their AI generated stuff and their tools and all the things that they're creating. It is a fascinating part of our economy, and it is in a sense in a bubble. It's its own little economic sphere, and I think the things they're claiming it's going to do is not exactly quite right, but it's all at the same time, at least not yet. However, it's happening very quickly. The reason I bring it up is because the faster it develops, the faster it develops. In other words, what they're saying they can do today, it may have taken them a year to get accomplished from point. They can now do in what they did in that year, they can do it in a month. So what's going to happen in the next 12 months? And then the next month, in 12 months from now, what are they going to be able to do? It would take them a year to do starting today. They're going to be able to do in a month. It compounds on itself. At some point, this lavishes out. It can only go so much so fast. And we are in that stage right now where at some point it plateaus. We are in the stage right now where it is rocketing up. Literally just shooting way up. And the only thing that's slowing it down or holding it back, I think, is the speed of the data that can be processed. And of course, the learning that it has to do, that the models have to do. It's very interesting stuff. my question is, and this is because it's a topical Tuesday and because we're talking about the market, the big issue here, Google is actually not a search engine. It's a free search engine. Why is it free? Because they monetize it. There are advertisements, and they also – people pay to have their words at the top of the search list. And they want to be on the first page, and they will pay for that. How will AI and AI agentic stuff be monetized? That is the real question. And I think Google has a plan for that. I'm sure a lot of them do. But Google is in the point. Google is in that world, in that sandbox already. They're already doing it. How they will monetize this, and we're going to talk about this a little bit tomorrow, and how things are going. ChatGPT is free, with this idea that eventually it will be monetized, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow, and how this is going to probably be the trigger. Once that starts to happen, we will see a huge shift in the way AI is used and generated, and everything that's going to happen with it bit for businesses. It is a right now. It's a wide open, you know, crazy world in AI, but I think we're going to see a big change in the future. So, thanks for listening. It is Tuesday again, and tomorrow is going to be Wednesday. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, is the whole monetization of AI and how it's going to affect stuff. So, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the show, for listening to my drivel for an hour. So it went over an hour. Look at that. An hour and 6 minutes. Folks, thanks for listening again. God bless. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week. Be back tomorrow morning. In the meantime, I will see ya.